This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
at GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today on Science Fantastic, we're going to talk about the universe. What's out there? Are there planets that resemble the planet Earth? Is there a doppelganger out there, a twin of the planet Earth, among the thousands of exoplanets we've discovered so far? With us today is Dr. Patty Boyd. We're very glad to have her. She's a NASA scientist. She's Project Scientist for NASA's test mission, and she's also the chief of the Exoplanets and Stellar Astrophysics Laboratory at the Goddard Space Flight Center outside Washington, D.C. And if you want to find out more about this program in Science Fantastic, go to my website. It's mkaku.org, mkaku.org. I've written 4 New York Times bestsellers. The latest New York Times bestseller is called The Future of Humanity, where I talk about the space program. What will the space program look like 50, 100, maybe even 1,000 years into the future? And also on Facebook, we have 3 million fans on Facebook. On Twitter, about 1 million people pick up my Twitter feeds every week. And once again, you are listening on Science Fantastic, which is carried on about 100 radio stations across the United States and also the Internet. So today, we are talking about the question, what's out there? The holy grail of planetary astronomy is to find a twin of the Earth circling a distant star. And how close are we to getting there? With us once again is Dr. Patty Boyd, project scientist for NASA's test mission and chief of the Exoplanets and Stellar Astrophysics Laboratory at the Goddard Space Flight Center. So the first question for you, Patty, is how did you, as a youth, first get interested in science?
Wow. So I can't remember a time in my youth when I wasn't fascinated by the night sky. One of my very first memories is my father pointing out the moon through a window to me. And I just remember being mesmerized, looking at the moon, fascinated, watching the patterns of the sky changing over time, day to night. So I think astronomy has always called to me from a very young age. And it wasn't until much later, towards the end of high school, that I actually realized that astronomy was a science that you could study in college, that you could, go and train to be an astronomer. So it seemed like the absolute right thing to do. I've always been fascinated by everything in the universe, from the closest objects to us all the way out to very distant galaxies and, the history of the universe itself from the Big Bang to today.
And what advice would you give a parent who has a child who may be showing some interest in science and astronomy? Would you give them a telescope? Give them a visit to the planetarium? What would you do?
So I would say that parents should encourage their children to ask questions and search together for answers. If the parents don't know the answers, there's so much information available now, certainly online, in libraries, and planetarium shows are wonderful immersive experiences to bring children to, where they can learn some of the really cool basics about our universe. But also going to all the NASA sites online that have a lot of educational information there. Buying a telescope is kind of tricky because it does involve, a lot of hands-on experience. experience to get it set up. It involves a bit of a time commitment to get going. But if you have that inclination, if you know how to, you know, put a telescope together, or just in many cases just pull it out of a box and start to focus things, then this is a great piece of equipment to have in your home on beautiful nights where you can see bright objects in the sky, take a telescope out and look closer. See if those are actually planets. And, you know, this is something that Galileo was able to do when he looked with a telescope the very first time over 400 years ago. And in many ways, we can reproduce that moment, that sense of wonder where the universe comes alive for you when you first look through a telescope and you see that amazing amount of detail that in the objects that are near us just by putting a telescope to your eye.
And some of my astronomer friends say that instead of buying a very expensive telescope for your kid, first of all, give them some binoculars. See whether they're even interested in looking at the moon at night with binoculars, and then from there you can graduate to more sophisticated telescopes.
So that's definitely a way to check and see if, you know, you are interested in going a step further. And binoculars are very tractable. You know, most people have one in their home. If not, it's not too expensive to get one, and they're very easy to use. So I totally support that as a great first step.
Okay, well, you mentioned Galileo, and a contemporary of Galileo was Giordano Bruno, a former Catholic monk. He was burned alive in the streets of Rome in 1600 for having the audacity to say that there are planets out there in the heavens, some of which may have intelligent life on them. Now, today we don't burn astronomers anymore, but what do we look for when we look for extrasolar planets? They're so dim, the mother star is a billion times more luminous than the tiny planet going around it. How do we find extrasolar planets?
So you've really hit the nail on the head there about what kind of a needle in a haystack that we're looking for. And I love that story of Bruno and how he was already looking up to the stars in the night sky and comparing them to our own sun, which is a star that has planets around it like Earth, and wondering and thinking it's probably true that those stars have planets around them. So we've been doing this for hundreds of years. We've been cataloging it, writing stories about it, science fiction. But for almost the entirety of our time as humans with the ability to use telescopes and look at the stars, these measurements have been out of reach. It's only really for the last generation or so where we've been working on our technological advancements and really understanding the problem of how do you detect a planet that is a billion or even 10 billion times fainter than the star that it orbits around and very close to that star in the sky. How do you make those measurements? I'm so excited to be alive in this period of time where we as scientists actually have the technology at our fingertips to be able to take those next steps, to be able to detect planets around stars. So when I was a kid, the only planets we knew about were the planets around the sun, our star. But today, we know of hundreds of billions of planets around stars in our Milky Way galaxy only. And we've only scratched the surface here. So, we now know that the Milky Way is plentiful, filled with planets, many of them much smaller than Neptune, but bigger than Earth. And we are working hard to take those next steps to now start to characterize some of those planets that we've detected and be able to say more about them as places. Do they have atmospheres? And if they have atmospheres, what are the chemical components of their atmospheres? And could they be similar to that atmosphere we have here on Earth that is so conducive to life in so many forms?
Okay, and as I understand, when you look at a distant star in the night sky, some of them wobble a little bit, and also the light, the starlight, dims periodically on some of these stars. So why is it that some of these stars wobble regularly, and other stars seem to dim in terms of the intensity of their starlight? Why?
So that's a great question, and it all hinges on the physics of the orbits that these planets are in around their stars. So we know that objects that are orbiting each other actually influence each other's motion. It's not true that just a planet is orbiting around a star. The planet and the star are orbiting around what we call our common center of mass, and that's a point on the line between the sun and the star where you can just perfectly basically balance the gravitational forces. So what that means is, as a planet is going around the star is actually also making a little circle in the sky around that center of mass. And it's much easier for us to measure the motion of the stars because they are so much brighter than
okay,
the planet.
Okay, Patty, we have to take a short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue our discussion of extrasolar planets, the Kepler mission, and the new test mission to explore extrasolar planets. And you are listening to Science Fantastic. And if you want to get on 100 radio stations, then give us a call at 612-564-8135, and maybe you can get on national radio. So once again, this is Science Fantastic.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight. At GCN Team, our healthy body weight loss system simply neutralizes the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Hey, Bugsy, you hear the news about Vinny?
Yeah, it's a real shame. He owed money to the IRS and they finally caught up with him.
Just like Al Capone.
If the IRS can get the Capone, imagine what they can do to little old Vinny, huh?
Poor cat, he was on top of the world. Bada boom, bada bing.
What Vinny needs now is an offer he can't refuse.
Hey, you got a tax problem? Does the IRS claim you owe them a bunch of dough? They can get you, too. So call the Tax Relief Line now and learn if you qualify to negotiate your $10,000-plus IRS tax debt for up to a 75% savings. Don't be like Al or Vinny and get busted. Make this free call now. Learn how you may be able to pay the IRS less.
Call now. 800-590-4930. 800-590-4930, 800-590-4930, that's 800-590-4930.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again on Science Fantastic tonight. Today we are talking about, well, what's out there in outer space? Is there a twin of the Earth in outer space? Are there planets out there that may have oxygen atmospheres, oceans, and may even have life forms similar to those on the planet Earth? With us today is Dr. Patty Boyd, Project Scientist for NASA's Test Mission. Mission and Chief of the Exoplanets and Stellar Astrophysics Laboratory at the Goddard Space Flight Center outside Washington, D.C. And when we last left off, we were talking about the fact that these exosolar planets are trillions of miles out there in outer space. They're very dim. They don't emit any light of their own. And it's very difficult to categorize their existence. So the question is, how do we do it? You mentioned that we look for the wobbling of the mother star, but also don't we look for the dimming of starlight as the planet goes in front of the mother star?
That's right. That's called a transit. That tiny dip in light when a planet passes in front of the star with respect to how we're looking at the star. And not every planetary system is aligned perfectly with respect to us that they show transits. It's only about 10% or less of those systems that are perfectly aligned so that they're planets that are going around in a plane, just like our planet. They pass in front of that star when we're watching them. And those dips that we see when a planet passes in front of its star are usually about hundreds of parts per million. So it requires very precise measurements.
Now, I understand that the Kepler mission radicalized our understanding of the universe by being able to zero in on a piece of the Milky Way galaxy and look for these transits, and it was able to document about 4,000 of these extrasolar planets. So it was a revolutionary mission, but as I understand, is crippled. Can you explain what happened to this historic space mission, the Kepler?
Sure. So Kepler was launched in 2009, basically with the goal of answering one question. How common is a planet like Earth around a star like the Sun? And in order to do that, because we didn't know the answer ahead of time, we had to look at about 150,000 stars that were similar to the Sun all at once, without blinking, making these very precise transit measurements we just talked about. And so Kepler was actually a NASA mission that was launched with a four-year baseline mission. We needed 4 years because we wanted to see a planet like Earth transit a star like the Sun in the habitable zone, where we are in our solar system, where we're not too hot for all the water and atmosphere to be blown away, and we're not too cold that any water that was on the surface would just freeze down onto the surface, but we're in that perfect habitable zone, Goldilocks zone, where we have liquid, water, gaseous water, ice, all together forming and helping support life. So that was Kepler's goal. In order to see a planet like the Earth transit a star like the Sun and know that it was really there, you'd want to see three of those transits. So we knew we had to look for at least 3 years to find Earth-like planets transiting stars like the Sun. And Kepler has cataloged, in that quest for looking for planets like Earth, has cataloged numerous planets of many, many different orbits, so closer to their star than we are to the Sun, all the way out to Earth-like orbits, and also planets that were very large all the way down to some that are smaller than Earth. So it did a great job of cataloging all of the transiting planets in that little patch of sky that it looked at. It was 10 degrees across by 10 degrees. But in order to do that, it needed to stay extremely stable. And when we put telescopes up into space and we solved that problem of keeping them perfectly pointed at a specific space and time, that requires that we have something on board called reaction wheels that basically handle any changes in motion and correct for it. And Kepler lost one of its reaction wheels. It could still work with three that it had. But then when the second reaction wheel was lost, it could no longer remain pointed in that original field. So we did a new mission called K2, where it looked in the ecliptic plane, which is a place where we can keep the telescope a little bit more stable. And K2 went on until Kepler ran out of its last drop of fuel. So Kepler basically just did about twice as long as we were expecting for its prime mission. It discovered thousands of planets along the way, and it's such a rewarding feeling as a scientist involved in that mission to know that we ran that mission until we just couldn't have one more drop of fuel for the mission. So I wouldn't call it crippled. I would say it led a wonderful, productive life, and it faded away.
Now, I understand that for many a generation, astronomers wanted to take a census of our backyard, the Milky Way galaxy, to find out what fraction of stars we see at night, every night, have planets circulating around them. Now, I understand that the latest census shows that on average, every single star has a planet going around it. Is that true? That on average, essentially all the stars you see at night have planets going around them.
It is true, and this is exactly the question that Kepler was launched to solve. So remember, Kepler was looking to find out how common or Earth or rare was a planet like Earth. So in order to do that, we did this exact census that you're talking about, looking at those 150,000 stars in one small patch of the galaxy, collecting our statistics on the planets, and then using that result in that little fraction of the galaxy to then extrapolate how many stars are in the galaxy and how common would planets be in the galaxy. And when we took the results we got from Kepler and did that extrapolation, the answer actually comes out to be the best answer we possibly could have hoped for. Planets are everywhere, and on average, there are more planets than stars in the Milky Way galaxy. So we know there are at least 100 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy, probably many times more. And that means when you look up at the night sky, you're just looking at a piece that your eye can see, but you're looking at a part of hundreds of billions of planets as well.
Okay, now we have...
I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's a much bigger number than I said.
Okay. Now then the next question is, of the thousands of exoplanets that we have seen in outer space, discovered using these devices, what fraction of them resemble the planet Earth?
That is a great question, and the answer is very mysterious. So when we first started looking for planets, we started finding the easier ones that could be found, the ones that are very massive like Jupiter, because they give off more reflected light, they're easier to find that signal in the motion of the stars. But with Kepler, we started to push down to being able to find smaller and smaller planets. That's what it was designed to do. And one of the cool results from Kepler is that when you did this census and you looked at the statistics of the sizes of planets that were found with Kepler, the result was that the most typical sized planet in our galaxy is one that we don't even have any analog for in our own solar system. They're very plentiful. They're bigger than the Earth, and they're smaller than Neptune. So we made up categories for them. We call them super Earths or mini Neptunes. And it turns out that we think that there are probably two separate populations of planets that are giving us that bump in the distribution, that, you know, more planets bigger than Earth and smaller than Neptune. And they're teaching us so much about how solar systems form and evolve. So it's a really exciting result that we're getting, that the most plentiful planet out there is one that we don't even have in our solar system, because it gives us a different type of planet to try to study and understand more of. But it also opens up this really interesting question, which is, if that's the most plentiful type of planet in our Milky Way galaxy, why don't we have one in our own solar system?
Now, I remember when I was a child learning about the planets for the very first time, that the assumption was that our solar system is probably very ordinary, that you would have rocky planets in the center orbiting around the sun like Mercury, Venus, Mars. Then you would have the gas giants further out in circular orbits around the sun. And beyond that, you would have comets. Now, weren't we totally wrong? I mean, isn't our solar system in some sense a freak? I mean, aren't we the exception?
Well, that's a really hard question to answer. It's a really cool question, because, you know, we took basically a sample of one, our own solar system, and then we developed solar system formation models that matched what we see in our own solar system, and then again did that extrapolation and assumed that that is what happened in every single solar system. That's very dangerous when you do that when you only have an example of one. You don't know what oversimplifications you're making. You don't know what's a general result versus something very specific to our solar system. And we also have the issue now that we have only been probing solar systems for a few years with Kepler and TESS. So that means we're only seeing planets that are on a shorter orbit than the planets that are further out in our own solar system, like Saturn, Jupiter, the big planets beyond that. We could never have detected them with Kepler or TESS yet. So it turns out that the solar systems that we're finding do look a lot different than our own solar system. We're finding a lot of solar systems.
Okay, Patty, we have to take yet another short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to leave Kepler and go on to TESS. What is this new space mission called TESS, and what do we hope to find? Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic. If you want to get on 100 radio stations, give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. Ask a question, and maybe you can get on national radio. So this is Science Fantastic.
Music. Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
President Trump is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, pushing for the USMCA, a new trade agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. The president says the NAFTA replacement will improve global trade relations.
We restore our economy. We're really restoring our standing in the world. We're respected again. America is respected again, like it hasn't been respected in many, many years. We were laughed at. We were a patsy.
Trump says the new agreement will protect American workers and incentivize companies to keep their operations in the U.S. Storm surge already splashing water into roadways across southern Louisiana, with Barry expected to make landfall Saturday morning. This New Orleans woman says seeing the strong current and high water on Lake Pontchartrain has her worried.
I see the lake look like it's about to overflow, and it's splashing up on land. I'm like kind of scared now.
20 to 25 inches of rain expected this weekend in parts of Louisiana. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hey travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
800-871-3291. 800-871-3291. Again, that's 800-871-3291.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-919-5435. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-919-5435. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-919-5435. 1-800-919-5435.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what Dr. Joe has to say.
As you know, I'm one of the doctors that Don talks about, because 4 years ago, I was diagnosed with high blood pressure. Runs in my family on my mother's side. You know, I come from an athletic background. You know, I did a lot of running throughout my life, and I did triathlons. When I was trying to run some years back, I was getting short of breath, which is a little bit of a congestive heart failure. The Extendivite, that shortness of breath and that coughing started going away. I was able to run longer and longer distances, and it took a while, though. So now I'm able to do, you know, 3.5 miles with my dog, and no problem. I don't stop. Not anymore. So I'm just saying, you need to stick with the program, and you've got to change some lifestyle things, too.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite. Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And once again, if you want to know more about Science Fantastic, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. I've written 4 New York Times bestsellers. The latest one is about the future of the space program. And with us today to talk about some of the discoveries about the space program is Dr. Patty Boyd. She's the project scientist for NASA's test mission and the chief of the exoplanets and Interstellar Astrophysics Laboratory at the Goddard Space Flight Center. Well, before the break, we talked about Kepler, the fact that by looking at the dimming of starlight in the heavens, we can identify planets circulating around, well, about 4,000 stars in the night sky. Now we have TESS. And the question is, what is the difference between Kepler and TESS, and what do we hope to find with this new satellite in space?
So if Kepler told us that planets are everywhere with its senses, which is typically looking at stars that were about 3,000 light years away and fairly dim stars, the next step is to find those transiting exoplanet systems that are closest to us in the Milky Way. So TESS allows us to take that next step. And why do we want to do that? Well, we want to have a catalog of the nearest exoplanet systems, the transiting exoplanet systems, and we want to know which ones are around the nearby bright stars, because bright stars are actually much easier to follow up with the telescopes, much more sophisticated ground-based and space-based telescopes that we have today, the ones that we're planning for the near future, and the ones that we're even planning for the far future. So TESS is using the same technique that Kepler used, looking for transits, but it's doing it with an all-sky survey, so looking at the entire sky, northern hemisphere stars and constellations, southern hemisphere stars and constellations. It's collecting transits, and it's designed to look for transits around nearby stars, brighter stars, and also smaller stars, because it turns out that 70% of the stars in our solar neighborhood are actually significantly smaller than the sun. They're smaller, they're cooler, they're redder. So TESS is looking for transits around nearby bright stars and cool stars.
Now, of course, we want to find out which planets out there may have life on them. And I understand that these red dwarfs that you talk about are quite plentiful and opening up a whole new chapter in our search for life in outer space. But I also understand that these red dwarf tiny stars are unstable, and they have gigantic solar flares. And any planet that circulates around them, even if they're inside the Goldilocks zone, they may have to worry about all the radiation coming from the solar flares from the mother star. How's that shaping up?
So this is actually a really vigorous area of research, and it's something that we are thinking about so much more all across the scientific spectrum, not just astrophysicists, but heliophysicists, those who study the sun and the sun's evolution, planetary scientists, Earth scientists who know a lot about how the early sun and its high energy radiation impacted the early Earth atmosphere. So it's true that M stars, while they're small and cool, they typically have flaring activity that just dwarfs even the strongest solar flare. And because those stars have small habitable zones, so you have to get closer to the little star in order to be in that Goldilocks zone, that means that any planet that's in a habitable zone may be impacted by high energy radiation and ultraviolet, the X-rays, particles coming off these huge flares. So the pendulum swings back and forth on this a lot. High energy is actually important to start chemical processes that are biological processes, we think. Also, M stars are active in their early lives, but the activity slows down as they age. So it could be that young M stars are very inhospitable to the planets around them, but we really don't know how that is going to evolve with time. So there's a lot of research going on studying flares of these M stars.
Okay, Patty, we have to take yet another short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to talk about, well, life in outer space. I mean, are there aliens out there? Is there intelligent life in the galaxy? Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And if you want to get on 100 radio stations and ask questions about science, give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135, and maybe you can get on national radio.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
If you owe money to the IRS, you need to hear this. The IRS is cracking down on those who owe back taxes. It starts with a devastating letter, and if you don't act immediately, you could find yourself having your wages garnished or have a lien placed on your property. But there's a solution. Tax 10,000 can help. Avoid enforced compliance, where these holds on your income and seizure of your home could become a nightmare that just won't end. Call 800-239-9957 now and speak to one of our experts. 800-239-9957 is the number to link you directly to a tax resolution specialist who will negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Working through the IRS Fresh Start program, all the forms will be handled for you. All you have to do is make the toll-free call. 800-239-9957. Find out if you qualify and possibly save yourself thousands of dollars, not to mention a lot of headaches. It could be the best call you've made today. That number again, 800-239-9957. The service does not provide tax settlement or legal services. We will refer you to a company that does provide such services. Often the IRS will not agree to any reduction in the amount owed. Not all taxpayers who owe more than $10,000 will qualify for a tax reduction program.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today we're going to ask the question, what's out there? When you look at the night sky and you realize that on average, every single star you see at night, on average, has a planet going around it, then you can't help but wonder, is anyone looking back at us, wondering whether there's any life in our sector of the Milky Way galaxy? Well, with us today is Dr. Patty Boyd, project scientist for NASA's TESS mission, and we are talking about TESS, the successor to the Kepler satellite, a satellite which detected 4,000 extraplanets orbiting other stars. Now, I remember when the movie Star Wars came out, a lot of astronomers howled and screamed and said, how unscientific. There's Luke Skywalker looking at the heavens, and there's a double star out there. And come on, give me a break, they said. Look, celestial mechanics means that double star systems with planets going around them are quite unstable. And therefore, you're not going to have Star Wars with that beautiful scene of Luke Skywalker staring at a double star system. Well, as I understand, the astronomers back then were wrong. We see star systems that are triple star systems that are even more complicated than the one seen in Star Wars, like our closest neighbor, Alpha Centauri. Could you elaborate?
Oops. That's a really good point. They were wrong. So Tatooine is that beautiful sunset image of Luke Skywalker looking off into the double sunset. And Kepler did discover some circumbinary planets, we call them, planets that are orbiting binary systems. So there are actually areas that are dynamically stable around tight binaries. And, of course, you know, we can go back and redo simulations of how solar systems form and where the stable points are in such systems, and there are ways to make stable solar systems around binaries. And yes, you're right. There's even a new system, a triple system, that was detected by TESS and just announced recently around three small M stars. this is all exciting, and it leads us to really go back and look at our models of how solar systems form and what is dynamically stable and over long periods of time.
Okay, and also, Tess, doesn't it look for planets that are smaller and therefore perhaps more Earth-like than the Kepler satellite?
Yes, that was absolutely the goal. Our goal, we call that a level one requirement, you know, what we consider our success criteria. We would like to know after 2 years that we have measured the masses of at least 50 planets that are smaller than 4 Earth radii. So 50 planets smaller than Neptune. And we're all well on our way. We've announced 24 planets to date.
Now, one day, if you find a planet that has the same size as the Earth and perhaps lies in the Goldilocks zone and maybe evidence of H2O, water or oxygen in the atmosphere, will you guys call a press conference and announce that you finally found a twin of the Earth in outer space? Or would you simply say, ho-hum, yet another planet we've discovered?
So that would definitely be a very exciting day, and I think of this exploration as a path where we're taking steps. And right now we've taken a step where we know there are lots of small planets. Tess is taking a step finding the close ones. We're going to start characterizing them, looking for signatures of things like water vapor and methane. Even not finding those signatures is really interesting, because it's interesting to think about how some planets keep an atmosphere like the Earth and other planets in our solar system did or did not. Venus has a tremendous atmosphere, too thick to support life. Mercury and Mars, the other two terrestrial planets in our solar system, no atmospheres. So we don't want to make that mistake of making the wrong conclusions. We're collecting together many, many more small planets now and looking just to answer that question, do they have an atmosphere? What is their density? Are they rocky like Earth? Or are they more like a Neptune that's much puffier, much less dense? So if we get to that point where we're starting to really suspect that we're seeing strong evidence for water vapor in a planet the size of the Earth, we would absolutely make an announcement about that as a very tantalizing planet. But to really go further and see if we've got really interesting molecules in the atmosphere, that's going to require something like the James Webb Space Telescope or even a telescope beyond that that's even bigger.
And speaking about the James Webb Telescope, many people say that in some sense is like the successor to the Hubble Space Telescope, which has been the workhorse for astronomy for the past several decades. What do we expect to get from the Webb Telescope? But first, let's take another short commercial break, and afterwards, let's talk about the Webb Space Telescope. You are listening to Science Fantastic. Give us a call at 612-564-8135, and we are talking about the search for life in outer space with a NASA scientist, Dr. Patty Boyd.
Standing up for what's right, helping out when things go wrong, raising our voices alone or together, seeking the truth and speaking our minds, not just making records, but breaking them, fighting for victory on the battlefield and on the playing field, seeing the world through new eyes and the earth from miles above, redefining beauty, brains, and what it really means to be queen. Making ourselves heard on stage and on screen. Showing the way in Silicon Valley. And showing up for others wherever help is needed most. Not just making our mark, but making a difference. Now that's a job for a Girl Scout. Girl Scouts, preparing girls for a lifetime of leadership.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive.
Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need survivalist camps. The ultimate fully functional off-the-grid mobile survival bug out house that's well equipped and custom built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
Message and data rates may apply. Individual results may vary. Exclusions apply.
But hey, I'm buying a huge flat-screen TV so I can finally see it without my glasses.
Why not just get LASIK at the LASIK Vision Institute? That's what I'm doing.
My glasses and contacts are a pain. I'd love to finally get rid of these, but who can afford LASIK?
You can. Because the LASIK Vision Institute is offering dramatically low prices and an absolutely free consultation. Just text 211 to 350-350. The LASIK Vision Institute has already performed over 1 million procedures. They use the latest FDA-approved LASIK technology that helps the majority of patients achieve 20/20 vision for a fraction of what others charge. Better vision, better value. The LASIK Vision Institute. Make this the year you finally get LASIK. For a free consultation plus an extra 20% discount, text 211 to 350-350. You'll see for free if LASIK is right for you. That's D-O-1-1 to 350-350.
We all have heard about the benefits of fish oils, but what about the presence of heavy metals, PCBs, dioxins, furans, and other contaminants found in fatty tissues of fish? GCNteam.com recognizes this risk and offers IFOS certified tested omega-3 fatty acids. EPA, DHA insist on IFOS omega-3 fatty acid certification. Get the best at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is Dr. Patty Boy from NASA. She is the chief of the Exoplanets and Stellar Astrophysics Laboratory at the Goddard Space Flight Center. And we've been talking about TESS, a satellite program that is designed to search for extrasolar planets in outer space orbiting other stars. Now, I remember back in the 1960s, astronomer Frank Drake tried to estimate in the galaxy how many planets could sustain an advanced civilization. And there were so many unknowns to that equation. How many stars have planets going around them? How many planets are Earth-like? And how many Earth-like planets have life on them? But now we know so much more. Are we getting closer to answering the question raised by the Drake equation? On the other hand, things are more difficult because we realize that these stable star systems that can support life are quite rare. You need, for example, a gigantic Jupiter-sized planet to help clean out the debris of the solar system. You need a large moon so that your planet doesn't tumble, making life impossible. And so it seems to me that on one hand, we know more about Drake's equation, but it seems less likely that we can get a firm answer as to what percent of the stars have intelligent life forms going around them. What are your thoughts?
Well, we certainly know that those two things in our solar system were important to the development of life on this planet. That would be Jupiter cleaning out the inner solar system of huge impactors and the moon stabilizing our orbit so that we would have lovely seasons that repeated from year to year instead of having a tumbling, chaotic, seasonal place here on Earth. But again, we don't want to be drawing general conclusions based on our sample of one. So while that's been very important to us here on Earth, I think we still need to be continuing to collect these planets that look like they could be tantalizing places, which TESS is doing. We also continue to search to look for something called technosignatures. How do we scientifically look for evidence that an intelligence has developed on a planet and an intelligence like ours that actually impacted its environment in a way that we could measure? So we're looking for biosignatures. People think about how to find technosignatures to find another example out there around another star would allow us to put to the test some of the assumptions we've been making about our own solar system and how important things like Jupiter or a moon really were.
Now, recently, there was a gigantic asteroid or comet that drifted in from another solar system in outer space and drifted right by our planet, sparking speculation at Harvard that maybe it was actually a spaceship, an intelligent design spaceship from another solar system that was passing through our solar system. First of all, what is the latest consensus about that? Do people think that that statement by these Harvard professors was a crackpot statement? Or is it really possible that one day we might find something coming at us from outer space designed by an intelligent civilization? What are your thoughts?
Well, it certainly didn't yield any observed evidence that it was not a natural object. So we didn't detect any type of signal from this object, which is called Oumuamua, that would lead us to believe that it wasn't natural, that it was made by intelligence. But at the same time, we certainly don't have enough information to definitively say that it wasn't. So keeping that possibility open is interesting. It's driving a lot of conversations. I think that most people are pretty conservative as scientists go and believe that having an extraordinary claim like that really does require extraordinary evidence. Something that Carl Sagan was known to say many times. So, you know, people love to think about these possibilities. Certainly looking for ways to prove that it isn't made by an intelligence is a useful time. And we also are encouraged then to look for other things that are we can prove are not on solar system orbit, so that they're coming into the solar system but then going out on an orbit that isn't bound. Or to even think about where we could look within our own solar system, places where we might have missed, where another civilization might have put a probe to check out what was going on around the sun. So these questions don't get asked a lot in a scientific format because they are considered kind of fringe and there's not a lot of proof for these kind of things. But just having the ability to talk about them with scientists is really pretty exciting and allows us to put limits on, you know, what is possible and what is not.
Okay, well, let me put you on the spot. I've put a lot of astronomers on the spot. Do you personally think that there could be intelligent civilizations out there? And if so, then how come they don't visit us? What are your thoughts?
So I sure do think with hundreds of billions of potential locations just in the Milky Way alone, that it would be very shocking if there weren't some type of biological process that could take hold around another star. But it's a far cry to go from that to developing something that we would recognize as intelligence. You know, again, we're using how we define intelligence here on Earth and then extrapolating it to an enormous galaxy. So I think that we could make some huge mistakes there. I think we really need to think about what intelligence means and how we might go about detecting that on other planets far away. But again, we've only really just scratched the surface of our own galaxy. So we don't know how common or rare our circumstances were that developed our intelligence, our position in the galaxy, in time and in space. But I think it's just such an exciting time to be putting little pieces of that puzzle together and being able to answer that question. So I certainly hope we get some really, really tantalizing observational evidence that something interesting and non-natural is going on around a planet, around a star in our galaxy in my lifetime.
Well, we've had a number of physicists from the SETI project, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. They firmly believe that, yes, they're going to risk their career and bet that there are intelligent species out there. But then the question is, well, how come they don't visit us? Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time. Our special guest today, thank you so much, Patty, for being on Science Fantastic.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Our special guest today has been Patty Boyd, project scientist for NASA's test mission and chief of the Exoplanets and Stellar Astrophysics Laboratory at the Goddard Space Flight Center outside Washington, D.C. And you've been listening to Science Fantastic. If you want to get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic, give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters on the radio station you're listening to, the website you're listening to perhaps, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on national radio. Give us a call.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart If you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.